the 3 weeks is a time to reflect on Churban, really on destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, destruction of Am Yisrael throughout the ages. It's not exactly that time of year which we are so fond of and so into. It's like a bit of an awkward time, and it's becoming a lot worse at the end of this week. But traditionally and typically, what do we do during the 3 weeks and the 9 days? And when Tisha B'Av comes along and you're bored and fasting and not in a good mood, so what do you spend your day doing? So it has become common practice to spend our day on watching Holocaust movies and the likes. And effectively, that means that Tisha B'Av has become National Mourning Day. It's a day of history and of remembering something that occurred, an event that occurred in history. And we're like, I don't know what the Churban is, no movie of the Churban, but the Holocaust, Churban, we associate in the same way. In fact, though, the 3 weeks is a lot deeper than that and a lot more relevant than that. It isn't just history. And it has a relevance to a person living with Mishmane Yaretz. Thank God we're not living in that kind of situation whereby there doesn't look like any lacking of food on the table right now. And you're living in that kind of position. So the Shaila is, in that case, what is the meaning of the 3 weeks in a sense of how do we make it relevant to us? How do we take the nekuda of it and learn from it and become something different? Because the Gemara says, "Kol mishlo niv the Beis Hamikdash b'yomav kilu nechrav b'yomav." If the Beis Hamikdash was not built in your day, then it was actually destroyed in your day. So consider the Beis Hamikdash not destroyed a few thousand years ago, but rather today and now. And now the question begs: what are we going to do to stop this ongoing Churban Beis Hamikdash and to rebuild a new Beis Hamikdash? So what I'd like to do is take it from the following prism. I want to take an event that occurred in history. It's a very interesting event in Tanakh. What happened was, Am Yisrael was essentially reduced to a pulp, to one little nekuda that was left. It is a story that's recorded in Divrei Hayamim and in Melachim. And Am Yisrael was, Malchus Beis David, I should say, was destroyed almost. And it was this close. And something happened and something transpired which allowed the continuity of Malchus Beis David and thus allow for one day the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash. And once we can appreciate what that is, because there are no stories in Tanakh. The Tanakh is full of Hayrois. Torah is Lashon Hayroi. If something's written in the Torah, maybe it's transcribed in story format, but what it actually is an ability and explanation of how we can live our lives. And when we delve into it, we discover a very relevant message to our lives. So, the background, the story I refer to is this. In Kapitel Peites and Tehillim, very interesting words to read Tehillim alongside, together with the stories in Tanakh as they occur, and you look at David HaMelech and you see, you actually live with him, his experiences as he's going through life, and he's describing in Tehillim how he's davening, and this is my feeling that I'm having whilst kach v'kach event is taking place. So Kapitel Peites in Tehillim is all about Chazdei Hashem Oila Mashira. I'm going to sing the kindnesses of Hashem. And he proceeds to explain the kindness of Hashem is that God chose me, David HaMelech, to be king forever. And there's numerous psukim which lay it out that Kiyoreach Yikoin Oilam Ve'id Bashachak Ne'eman Sela. And he says it there. He says, Matzosi David Avdi B'Shem Enkotchi Meshachti. I found David, I anointed him with oil, and I declared that his melucha would last forever. Which means, the pasuk in Vayechi, which says, Lo Yosur Shevet Mihuda Ad Yovei Shiloi, is now granted, that gift is granted to King David. Lo Yosur Shevet Mihuda, the scepter, not only shall not, but rather a prediction. The scepter will never depart from Yehuda ad kiyovei shiloi until Mashiach comes. And that's why throughout history you have always had a Melech Mibeis David at the helm and the leadership of Am Yisrael. Mind you, even later on when Malchus Beis David is no longer in an official capacity, certainly you see that in in later times, there was the Reish Gelusa. The Reish Gelusa was the leader, the political leader in Babel, who was always from Beis David, and we still believe that today it still exists. And the question which begs to be asked is, why does Malchus Beis David get such a gift that they can last forever? What did Malchus Beis David do that warrants a long-lasting treaty with God of having all their descendants always there? Now, the question is really from David himself, because Shaul Be'achas V'loy Olsoloy, Shaul lost his kingship for one little infraction from the law, he's out, he was kicked out. David HaMelech, on the other hand, although he sinned with Bathsheba et al, which was apparently much worse, was granted the kingdom forever. But I'm not focusing on David and Shaul themselves today. What I want to focus on is the Melachim, which followed David HaMelech later on. And when you analyze what happened with Malchus Beis David later on, you come up with this question and you say, hey, they weren't so great and they weren't so righteous all the time. Why didn't they lose the kingship? Now, there were two kingdoms which ran alongside each other. Yerovam ben Nevat was the first king of Malchus Ephraim, which was 10/12 of the Jewish people. And Yerovam ben Nevat, he sinned, put the two golden calves over there to cause the people to bow down. He lost everything. And then later on, Achav and Izebel, they kill Yehu, murders them all, puts them all to death. And then Yehu starts a new dynasty, and that one is also destroyed. And so, time and again, Malchei Yisrael lose the kingship because they sin. But Malchei Beis David, once they become kings, they stay forever and a day. So I looked it up in Eitzra Chochma and found a sefer by Rabbi Chaim Eliezer Bukhovsky, who was a Chassidus Shalit in Yerushalayim in 1924. And in his sefer, didn't know the sefer existed before, but in his sefer, he asked this question, and he proceeds to go through and to list the kings and their sins. And he shows you all the Malchei Beis David. He says, you'll find that the vast majority had some major issue. So leave out David himself. Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo, what does it say? He married day one. He married Bas Paroi. And the Pasuk says, Be'api b'chamosi hoisali. I was upset, Hashem says, about this city, of the building of the Beis HaMikdash from day one. Because on day one he went and married Bas Paroi, and the Malach HaMavis went and Noatz Kone Bayam. He took a stick, stuck it into the ocean, and became this shoe, which was Italia Shilyov, on a little addition to Europe over there called Italy, which is Rome, which subsequently ended up destroying the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo had built. Well, the second one, but destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So Hashem wasn't too happy with him. After him comes Rechavam. Rechavam, his son, he was a tzaddik, but Rechavam, day one, he messed up. What did he do? The elders and the youngsters came over to him and said, which one should we follow? And the people who wanted a lower taxes, he said, nope, I'm not lowering the taxes. And he listened to his young friends, and as a result of that, the kingdom was split. Asa was a tzaddik, but failed at the end of his life. Avyo, his father, by the way, was good. Yehoshaphat, the son of Asa, was one of the greatest tzaddikim ever. The trouble was, Yehoshaphat became a mechutni to Achav, Melech Yisrael. And then he went to war and aided Achav, and that was his sin. As a result of that, he had a son called Yehoram, who married Atalia, who was a daughter of Achav, they were mechutanim, Achav, Melech Yisrael. Yehoram was just plain wicked. He just killed off all his brothers in order to consolidate his throne. Yehoram's son was Ahaziah. His mother, who was Atalia, was influencing him to go sin. The next one, Yoyosh, messed up. Yoyosh was the one who killed, who ordered the assassination of, remember? Zechariah HaKohen on Yom Kippur, in the Kodesh HaKodesh, in the Beis HaMikdash, in Azara, on Shabbos Yom Kippur, Zechariah, the blood that was boiling all the way, that was the tzaddik Yoyosh, who was a tzaddik his whole life. And then, right at the end, he put him to death. Then you have Amatziah, King Amatziah, it says he failed. Uzziyahu was?
He was the one that fought the rest.
He offered the Ktoiris, he tried to be a Kohen Gadol. So he came into the Beis HaMikdash, and he told the Kohen Gadol, I'm the king, I'm deciding to be the Kohen Gadol. and he tried to stop him, and Tsaras Zorcho al Mitzchoy, and he lost the throne. He was the one king whose son was king while he was alive, because he was outside as a leper, as a Metzaira. His son Yosam, by the way, was the one king throughout history who you have zero blemish on him. Yotam was a Tam. He was perfection, indeed. But then Achaz was a Rasha. Menashe was vile and wicked and beyond whatever you could imagine. Amon, Yoyakim, Rishoyim, Yo, the last king was a Tzadik, but he didn't listen to your Miyo. So there's basically 15 kings, or 18, depends how you count them. But yeah, like 90% of God issues. Some worse, some better. Yet, Malche Beis David gets promised, Yareach Yikonaylam, Layasta Sheva Mihuda, here's you guys. Why is it that Malche Beis David are granted this gift of a kingdom forever when you see clearly that they had major issues? So he explains it as follows. He says, in order to understand what a Malachim Beis David is, you've got to go back to the beginning of history, to the dawn of time, when Adam Arishon was created. Now, when Adam was created, he was this perfect being. Adam was like a, you know, like a child. Like, he probably didn't look like a child, like a baby, but he was a baby. He was a newborn, looking whatever, 30 years old. So he has this, you know, babies, they have this like just a connection. Like you don't feel this complexity and sophistication in the negative sense that adults have. Children are just wonderful and beautiful and innocent and naive, and that's what Adam Arishon was until he partook of the eighth, a das. And the moment he did, he got this das, and suddenly he became this adult who doesn't know what direction to take, who feels elated one day, and the next moment he's depressed and annoyed. He's trying to rationalize his own existence, because Yosef das, Yosef mocha, the more das you have, the more painful it actually is. So the second he got this das, it didn't bode him too well. Then what happened was, from that moment on, only certain tzaddikim had this power of connectedness. And everybody else has a disconnect for the next 2,448 years. Matan Torah reversed and went right back to that moment pre the Zuamot, pre the soiling that took place from the sin. Matan Torah, they got this beautiful connection, the naive connection back to God. It was amazing. But it lasted 40 days. And then they sinned in the Igal Azav. And once they sinned, we lost it again. And now, he says, so God's wondering, what do I do now? How do I keep this connection with my children? And we should feel each other, but without them messing up again. So what the Eibishter did was, he says, he provided us with a melech. Took some time, and we got a melech. What's a melech? A melech has to be a conduit who's going to be able to be himself so bottled to experience the experience that Adam Arishon had before the sin and be able to serve as a conduit to bring it down to the people. That's why a melech is called a nasi in the pasuk. What does a nasi mean? A nasi is a leader. He's a nitzot shel Yaakov Avinu. He's a spark of Yaakov, because all Jews are named for Yaakov. So he's going to be able to draw down this power to the people and to bring it to them. Who would be the melech? David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Va'ani va'ar v'lo yeda behemo yisayisi imo. He says, God, I don't know anything. What does it mean, ani va'ar v'lo yeda? I am pre the eda, the moment of das, pre chetei tadas. Behemo yisayisi imo. I'm a behemoth to you. That's a very positive statement. What he's saying is, I don't feel myself as a separate entity. All I feel is you. There is no me. And because there's no separation from God, he is able to serve as this perfect conduit to reveal the powers to a Jew. That's why, where does the Melech Mibes David reside? In the city of
Yerushalayim,
otherwise known as Tzion. Now, what does Tzion mean in English? Don't say Zion, because that wouldn't be a translation. It wouldn't be the same word. What does Tzion mean?
Excellent.
What?
Excellent.
Excellent, but Mitzuyan means excellent. What's a tziyun? No, you learn some Mishnayos. Mitzayinin al hakvaros.
A sign.
A sign, exactly. The reason why metzuyan is excellent is because it's a sign. It's a good sign. So a tziyun is a kever. Why? Because you want to stop kohanim from going into the kever, so you put a tziyun a sign, a mark on the keder. So metsuyan means marked, which we call Exodus, right? So why is the city of Tzion called Tzion? Because this is the one city where you feel the presence, you feel the nekuda, which other Mauritian felt before, which we call the Pintaleid. You feel the Tzion. That's why Kivachar Hashem B'Tzion Ivach LeMoishavlo. God wanted Tzion, He wanted you and your Pintale, but He can't sit in this external side of you. He wants to get to the core of what a Jew is. So, and it's called Ir David. What's an Ir David? Ir means Hisoyrus, to awaken the power of David. So what happens is like this. Every Jew has a core of a neshama. But the Melech Mibeis David, because of his bitul, his essential bitul to Hashem, and he doesn't feel himself, he is able to serve as a conduit to draw the power, the connection that God has to us, and to be able to just reveal it without any concealment whatsoever. So now we know why we have this Melech. Why specifically Malchei Beis David? Well, the same way as a Jew has this Pintaleid. A Jew has the power built inside him, as we'll see shortly. So a Melech Beis David, regardless of how he acts externally, internally, he has the power that was vested in him. And that's how he reveals and transmits being a Melech. So he cannot abuse his powers. But he is the one who's able to draw the power of what it means to be connected and to be Megale, to reveal it in the rest of the people. So let's take a look at this one cataclysmic event that took place in history. And what happened was, Malchei Beis David were decimated. There was kimat, nobody left to continue the legacy of Beis David. Practically, because they were all killed off. Here's the story. Story is, if we zoom out. So we said, Yehoshaphat the Tzaddik, Pashtus as a Tzidkus. He's like, let's be good with everybody. Why is there a fight amongst Am Yisrael between two kings? I'm going to resolve the fight in a very simple way. I'm going to become a mechutin to the other king. And then, without even a struggle, without a war, no civil war, we'll all become one. Unfortunately, it wasn't the right time, and it didn't work. So what happened was, he's the king. On the other side, in Malchei Yisrael, is Achav and the notorious Izebel. Izebel was a Phoenician convert. She introduced, I mean, she must have been Jewish, because, as you'll see, all Malchei Beis David come from Izebel. She married King Achav, right? But watch what happens. She marries Achav and Izebel. So she converted, no question. She was a real convert. After she converted, she introduces the Baal and the Asherah, gods that were never before served. She introduces them into Am Yisrael. So they don't know about these things, and she murders any Navi. She puts them to death. She gets rid of them. She completely destroyed the country, and she was the king. Too bad that her husband was just like a puppet to her. They had a daughter. This daughter's name was Atalia. Atalia got married to Yehoshaphat's son, whose name was Yehoram. Once she got married, she took whatever she learned by her mommy. That's what I'm saying. Right? She took whatever she learned there, and she brought it in and introduced it into Malchei Beis David, who had had issues till then, but never the way it worked now. So she prevailed on her husband, much like her mother prevailed on her husband, and she got her husband to sin, and he killed off all his brothers in order to consolidate the kingdom by himself. Finally, Yehoram was killed in battle. And Yehoram's son takes the throne. And his name is Ahaziah. Now, he's Melech Mibeis David,
His father is Yehoram, Yehoshaphat, right? All the way up, if you go, also Avio, Rechavom, Shlomo, David. So he is the continuity of Beis David. But his mother is Atalia. So he's a wicked man, to put it mildly. And for 1 year he ruled, and he was notorious. Then he died a horrible death. Now when he dies, his mother looks around and she's like, hey, so husband's dead, Yehoram. Son is dead. Who's going to become the next king? Someone else. But I don't want anybody else to become the king. So what's the solution? What? Yeah. So she's the Bobby. And she invites all her children and grandchildren to a feast and whatever. And there's different opinions how she did it. But she basically executed every single one of her grandchildren. Like all of them, the whole family, nephews, nieces, the whole thing. Any male, she put them all to death. And then she became the one and only period ever where there wasn't, instead of a melech, a malko, she became the queen. She was the queen, hands down. So she destroys everyone, and there's no more, there is no, I mean, it's just funny, she's the one that did it, but there's no more scion left to base David. So her son, Ahaziah, had a sister. His sister's name, it cannot be that she was a daughter of Atalia, she was probably a sister from another mother. Her name was Yosheva. And this Yosheva was married to an illustrious individual whose name was Yoyodo. Now, Yoyodo was the Kohen Gadol. So Yoyodo and Yosheva having a conversation. And they realize that this is pretty bad because there will be no more descendant left to base David. And there's a promise, right, that there'll always be a Melech in base David. So we have to do something. Because if we don't show up and do something right now, then history is going to be lost. This is a very dangerous, precarious moment in history. They were about to lose everything. If no more children are left to base David, then Mashiach can't come, basically. Chas v'shalom. Because it has to be a melech mi base David. And only they have the power. So they look around, they discover one little child. One male left. Who was this male? His name was, very good, Yoash. Yoash was the son of Ahaziah. Grandson of Yehoram and Atalia. So Bobby wanted him dead. And they took him. He was a 1-year-old baby. They took him and they hit him. So now the question is, put yourself in their shoes, where do you hide this baby? By the way, parenthetically, there was one other period in history when Malchei Beis David were also destroyed. That was during the period of Reish Gelusa. That's another interesting story, not for now. That was Bustanai's story. This story is about the story of Yoyosh. So Yoyosh is the one and only descendant left, and he is about to be put to death himself. Right? As Malsim. So they decided to hide him, and they were figuring out what's the best place to hide him. And they said, well, the best place to hide him is... Okay, Machloikes. True. We'll get there in a second. But it says as follows. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Ba'alias Beis HaMikdash Hayotom. And he was actually in the attic of the Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni says, Bata'im Hayatamim. He was in the chambers. Now, just figure the logic. The one who's hiding him is Yoyada, together with his wife, Yosheva. So they're hiding him inside there. And the question is, where do you hide him? So you know how when you want to bring your son into the business, what do? You bring him into your business. What else? If you're in real estate, he'll be in real estate. If you're in nursing homes, he'll be in nursing homes. And if you're a teacher, what's he going to be? So usually your kid's going to go where you go. So over here, you know, your Yodos, where do you hide him? So he had an office. So he hid him in his office, which was in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kohen Gadol Lishka. But as you rightly point out, the most interesting explanation of all, the Pasuk says they hid him in... What does the Pasuk say? What does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says they hid him Bachadar Hamitot, in the bedroom. question is, what's a bedroom? So some say it's a ta'im, it's an aliyah. Rashi, again in Tehillim, Rashi says in Kapitel Chav Zayin, which is famously known as the David Hashem Oiri, Rashi says, Ki yitzpeneini b'yem sukkot, ki yitzpeneini b'sukkot, v'yem roya stireini, and he'll hide me in his sukkah on the day of evil. So Rashi, this refers to the moment when Yoash had to be hidden b'chadar amitot, ki yitzpeneini b'sukkot, where was he hidden? He was hidden b'aliyas beis kodesh yakodoshim. They put him right into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that was the place where he was put into. Why? So the reason is because, well, number one, that's where he worked. He was a Kohen Gadol, and nobody would dream to look for him over there. So for whatever powers Atalia had, physical and spiritual, physical powers, I mean, where would she look? The only one place she wouldn't even dream of looking is the one place where Kohen Gadol is allowed to walk in once a year, Achas Bashana, after all that preparation. They said, yeah, there's no chance in the world he's going to look over there. And if you will, in a spiritual sense, there's also no chance. Because spiritually, what happens is, Atalia, let's say she had some kind of witchcraft and powers. So the one place she would not have any powers over is the Kodesh HaKadosh. And Yoyash was put inside there for 6 years. Now, why 6 years? Because him and his nursemaid, by the way, and I'm not clear on who the nursemaid was. My hunch is that it was Yesheva herself. But I don't know. Anyway, so he's living in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for 6 years. Now, why 6 years only? So one of the explanations is because Achas L'Sheva Shonim, once in 7 years, wash the walls and fix up and whatever needed to be done. So once in 7 years, can you imagine? These guys are walking in, they like got this thing, you know, on the social keys on their name, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they're allowed the box, and they're allowed to see exactly this part of the wall, move to the next one, so they shouldn't chas v'shalom see any part of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Imagine this box is being turned around the walls, and you suddenly look and you say, oh my gosh, there's a little baby here. And a nursemaid, it will be the most shocking revelation ever. So right before the time came to find them, they took him out. Which means, by the way, man, it's pretty crazy to think about it. You know how the Kohen Gadol walks at the Kodesh HaKadosh every year? And every year, in the second base of Mikdash, they would tie something to his foot. So that in case he died,
yeah,
right, they would be able to pull him out. Now, why would the Kohen Gadol die? If you had any feeling of self, or was it any feeling of ego of self, you would be dead. So, I mean, thankfully the Kohen Gadol was the guy who hit him there. But still, that means every year, for 6 years, the Kohen Gadol walked into Kodesh HaKadoshim and Yom Kippur. He sees the baby and he says, hey, what's up, kiddo? How you doing? This is the kid and his nursemaid. That's what would have happened. You would have actually walked inside only to see this little kid inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's a really shocking thought that anyone could think of. We'll get back to it. So 6 years he's there. At the end of 6 years, they make this, I was just learning it this week with my son, actually, a fascinating psukim, and very difficult to understand how they did it, but the pasuk tells you exactly, detail for detail, how they took him out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So they decide the moment has come to take him out, and they make a whole big circle around, and describes how it worked, when they were doing it, and which Mishmeres of the Kohanim. They make this circle, and they allow the baby to come out of Kodesh HaKadoshim, the 7-year-old little child. Now they don't tell Atalia, and Atalia suddenly discovers. She comes out, and this baby is being brought out. The people are in a very close circle, literally circling him, and figuratively also, and they put him up on a throne, and they put a crown on his head, and they announce that he's the Melech. And just then, Natalia walks in, Vatikra, and she called out, Kesher, Kesher, the coup d'etat. And they took her, and they assassinated her, they put her to death right there. And they took Matan, who was the elderly Kohen of the Baal, and they put him to death also. And at that point, they got rid of all the idols, and this becomes the Haftarah of Shabbos Shkolim, which is Vayichros Yehoyada Sapris, where they reenact they took Shkolim, the Beis HaMikdash, and they reenact, dedicate the Beis HaMikdash because of everything that she had done. So the question we need to deal with is, let's go back to that decision to take the baby and put him into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and analyze thoroughly that decision. How could they possibly have put him inside there? And it's a twofold question, because number one, you're not allowed to go there halachically.
asur to go inside.
Only the Kohen Gadol, only that time, and only when he prepares himself and he had to be worthy to go in. So how could they b'chlal even dream of letting him go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? And you know, that why is the Kodesh HaKadoshim metaphorically compared to a bedroom? It says when they would go, when the Goyim would come to Yerushalayim, they would open up the Paroichas, and they would show them from afar, they would see the Kruvim. And they would see the Kruvim, which were in the form of, according to some, of a husband and wife, they would see them cohabiting together with each other. And what that meant was, Kema'ar Ishu Levoyas, it says. What that meant was there was a love of the Eibishter and Knesset Yisrael that was taking place inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's why the Kodesh HaKadoshim is called Chadar HaMitot, because it is the bedroom which is the most sacred and intimate place between Hashem Yisborach and Am Yisrael. Now, just as in the metaphor, if anyone walks into that moment of intimacy with any feeling of ego or self, that's called self-destruct. One dare not feel oneself in any way. If you walk into that moment of intimacy, it's got to be all about the other. If one chas v'shalom has any feeling of self, of ego, then it's self-destructive, which is one of the great maladies of our generation. But you need to have complete thought about the other person. And that's what caused the Kohen Gadol to die, or anybody else who walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was dead, not as a punishment, but as a consequence of feeling yourself. So, what are they thinking? Madoch HaKohen Gadol, when he enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim for but a moment, has to have so many achronos of tefillah and mikveh in preparation for the 7 days before, and everything else is getting ready for, and we make a massive event out of this. What's Yom Kippur about? What's the highlight of Yom Kippur? It's the Avoida. What's the Avoida? The Kohen Gadol. Right, and we make Yakoyanimai, and that whole hullabaloo that we're making is kind of like all belittled when you think about the fact they took a little baby and put him in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You know what he had to do in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? He had to eat, sleep. I don't know. I mean, maybe his food was like the mon, and he didn't have to excrete in any way. But if he did, that sure would have been a problem of changing diapers. He had a nursemaid together with him. What are you thinking? How do you bechlal dare to put someone like that, inside and to have him eat, sleep, and do everything inside there? It makes no sense. And even if you argue, something I'm saying, it wouldn't make sense because he would die. But putting that aside, even if you argue there was no other place that Pekuach Nefesh would permit putting him inside there, so I'll tell you, there was another option, actually. The option was, the Rambam, in Perek Dalet, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, says that Evan HaYisab B'Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then he goes through and he describes how under the Kodesh HaKadoshim, under that rock on which stood the Evan HaShisi, on which stood the Aron HaKodesh, under it, there was some kind of trapdoor, and there was this tunnel, which led all the way under the Beis HaMikdash, Matmoinis HaMukos V'Akalkalos. And in those Matmoinis HaMukos V'Akalkalos, Yeshio HaMelech, many, many decades before the Churban, ordered the Aron to be hidden inside there. So, it was designed, the Rambam says, by Shlomo HaMelech himself. And that being the case, you have an option. At least, go figure out a way to hide him underneath. First thing about it, yes. Yeshio HaMelech hidden there.
So that would be a place that she would look. The Kodesh I can go into. So, yes, she would go look.
Interesting, but it had one step left. You can't get in without the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So you have to walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but at least doesn't have to live and eat and sleep.
Right.
So if you're getting inside, at least you save yourself for 6 years of a day. So what's the answer? Why? How? It's a twofold question. What were they thinking when they put him there? And question two, how did he survive there? If the Kohen Gadol has to be on such a level, how does a baby survive there for 6 years? And the answer would call us to a very deep place in our own neshamas. We have to really ask the question, what does it mean to be a Jew? How do you define Judaism? Right? Very difficult to pinpoint
the definition of a Jew. I was in Arizona a couple weeks ago, so we stopped by in some kind of forest area. And I park my car at a van, and the van comes right next to me and parks right next to me. Mamish at that second. And I get out the car, and another guy next to me gets out the car. And the guy, I'd seen a whole van, there was a whole family of Jews. And the guy comes over, shalom, manishma. And I say, hey, what's up? And what's my next question? Would you like to put on tefillin? So, obviously, I can say, you know. So the guy says, no. Absolutely not. And he was a bit too polite, but he wanted to say, like the Israelis say, ta'uf li me'apartzuf. But he just said no. So I'm talking with Evan, I see the grandfather, it was the whole family's grandfather, and the grandfather said, would you like to put on tefillin? I'm talking to him. He's from Turkey, from Istanbul, so would you like to put on tefillin? So he's thinking, yeah, no, whatever. And then I see his daughter from inside the car, she looks at him. And I think she realized he's about to put on tefillin. So she called him outside. Now, I don't speak Turkish, but I can tell you exactly what she said from the tone of voice. She must have been screaming at him and saying, don't even think of putting on tefillin. Don't you dare put on tefillin. Later, when she spoke to my wife, she says, I want nothing to do with Judaism. She lives in Sydney, Australia. They were meeting halfway. She said, I don't want anything to do with Judaism. And I'm watching this discussion. He's looking at her and he's saying, I'm Jewish. I don't care what you think. I don't, this is not what we are. We are Jewish. And in a defiant tone, he's like, who's the father over here? Walks out, comes over to me, he says, let's go. I got a picture, I got a good picture. He puts tefillin on. I can't help but think that the granddaughter was watching, and then one day she's going to marry a Jew because she was putting on tefillin. Who knows what that is? But it's always a question, what does it mean to be a Jew? Is it the mitzvahs that you do? Not really, because most Jews don't do mitzvahs. Is it the Torah that you learn? Can't be that either. Is it a culture, a race? What exactly is it? So there's this Jewish mother, which makes you just Jewish. But the definition of Jews is, as the pasuk words it, "Bonim atem la Hashem Elokeinu." You are children of God. That's what you are. And as a child, bro kara davua, a child is his father. So whatever the father is, you're a conduit. You carry your father down into you. You and your father are one. You're not a creation of Hashem. You are one with him, for whatever that means. You have a chelek eleka mimal mamash, a part of your father. You have a part of God built into you. And the trouble is that we also have another part built into us, which is probably the majority and the predominant part of us, which is a very animalistic, egotistical self that seeks narcissistic, egotistical powers and to be and to exist and ambitions. But the divine part of you senses God in a real, inexplicable way. So, a Jew who never knew the first thing about Judaism will die sometimes for Judaism. And it's fascinating, like, where do Jews get this power from? So you take the power of what a Jew is, and now you think about what exactly is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's the holiest part of the world. It's the part of the Beis HaMikdash where you cannot feel yourself. But do you know, the Medrash Rabbah says, not a very well-known Medrash Rabbah, it says that Aaron HaKohen, unlike every other Kohen Gadol, was actually able to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim whenever he so desired. He didn't need to wait for Yom Kippur for all the preparations. Aaron HaKohen was able to get in anytime he wanted. And the reason is because Aaron said of himself, together with Moshe, he says, V'nachnu mo, we are what? Now the word what, ma, is gematria adam. What a true mensch is a sense of whatness. He says, I don't feel myself. I feel my father. So most other Jews, the vast majority of Jews, They are a part of their father. They are a chelek elikam imal mamish, but they're not able to draw that power. They don't feel it on an ongoing basis. On an ongoing basis, you feel your own self and your own ego, because the external part of you takes over. So it takes a whole avodah to reveal the internal part of me. But when I summon that internal part of who I am, so my walking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is now a natural occurrence. That's who I am. So the Davidic kings, the Malchei Beis David, even if they didn't live up their lives to it, but what is a Melechim Beis David? He is one who can summon the power of what a regular Jew is, a chelek elikam imal mamish, at any given moment, almost like Aaron HaKohen was able to. But what happens? Most of the time, you're not cornered, and so you're not forced to reveal your innermost powers. Just like most Jews, although they have a very powerful chelek elikam imal mamish, don't actually reveal it. Ever seen a book called Incredible, written by Rabbi Yossi Wallace from Arachim? He has a phenomenal piece over there. He says like this: his father, Rabbi Wallace Sr., Mr. Wallace Sr., was in the camps, I think in Auschwitz. So he's in the camp over there, he says, and one day he was working in the crematorium, and one day a guy is walking into the gas chamber, takes something and shoves it into his hands, and he walks to his death. And when he looks after what's in his hand, he says he quickly is like feeling, you know, what it is, and he felt straps and the little Holocaust boxes. He felt tefillin. So he took the thing, he hides it. Now he's wondering, what do I do now? I have tefillin. So he decides, tefillin, I'm going to put on tefillin no matter what. So he puts on tefillin religiously, every single day. And he gets a whole crew of people to put on tefillin with him. And he's moisa nefesh for the tefillin. One day, this SS guard walks in, catches him red-handed, and he says, okay, tomorrow we are going to execute you. And he puts up this public execution scene the next day, and they're about to put a table in the middle, and they're about to put the noose on, and about to already kill him. And the guy says, hey, what's your last wish? He says, my last wish is that he buried my tefillin on. And they let him put his tefillin on, and they're about to hang him. And all the Jews are all sad. He looks at the Jews, and he says, you know, we won this. I'm dying with my tefillin on. That's a victory to us. So the SS officer says, oh, no way. We're not letting that happen. Takes off the noose. They gave him lashes. They thought they killed him, and they threw him on a pile of corpses. But he didn't die. He survived. And what's phenomenal about the story is that this yidah was meisa nefesh to put on tefillin because it meant so much to him. Subsequently succeeded in making it out of the war, and he arrived in no less than the Bronx, New York. And Rabbi Wallace says, my father never put on tefillin ever again in his life. You know why? Because nobody was trying to stop him from putting on tefillin. If you put a gun to his head and you're holding a noose, and it's Mesiras Nefesh to put on tefillin, he's like, don't you dare tell me as a Jew that I can't put on tefillin. But if I'm living in the Bronx, what do I need the tefillin for? So in the Bronx, he doesn't put on tefillin. And the absurdity of the Jewish soul is captured in that experience. That this Jew who's ready to die when he elicits the power of being a Jew, but when he doesn't, so then, well, no great shakes, why not? So Malchei Beis David had that exact experience. Malchei Beis David were, much of the time, as we noted, not exactly the most God-fearing, outwardly God-fearing Jew. And in kings-wise, there was a reason to lose it. Then came this moment in history where Malchei Beis David were attacked by Ataliah. And she was pressuring them and cornering them. And she gets rid of all Malchei Beis David, and who's left? There's only this one little individual left. And so what had to happen for this individual is he had to summon the deeper, innermost core powers of not only a Pinta Leid, but a Pinta Lemelech. And he had to discover what a Melech truly is. But the truth is that every Jew belongs naturally as a son of the Eibishter. And every single Jew is a son of God. And every single Jew actually belongs in the Kodesh HaKodashim. It's just that he has an external part to him, which will never allow the internal part to reveal. And so, alas, this Jew is stuck in an externality that he cannot shed. But when cornered, when you hold the gun to his head, and you say, it's over, there's no more Melech Mibeis David, then he says, don't you dare tell me that. And what he does is he summons the innermost koichas. You know, there's one of the most powerful statements ever that was made, that says that if you have a Jew who never went to Hebrew school, never received a Jewish education, didn't know the first thing about Jew, what being Jewish meant, and he was the last Jew in the world, and if this Jew, who was the last Jew left in the world, and didn't get a Hebrew school education, but once he realizes he's the last Jew left in the world, you know what he would do? He would rebuild the entire Judaism from scratch. He would figure out a way to create Judaism anew. Now, who made that statement? Who do you think? It was made by Yimach Shmoy in 1941, when they decided with Eichmann the final solution plan. Because one thing he realized, he knew the truth. He knew what a Jew truly was. When you corner a Jew, the Judaism comes out. When you corner a Melech Mibeis David, the truth of what he is comes out. And that's the power of what it means to be a Jew. So what we see in this message of Yoyash is, how did he go inside and just live and eat and sleep and do everything like a regular person? The answer is, because the life of a Jew, be'etzem, is holy. The life of a Jew is godly and divine. But it takes an Atalia to pressure and to corner you to have no choice, and out comes the Jew of the Jew. Out comes all these powers that we have. And that's what happens when we get to the 3 weeks. And when we ponder what goes on in the 3 weeks, no, it is not a time to look back historically and say, look how many tzaras befell our people. It's more time to look at ourselves and say, am I a Golus Dikayit or a Geula Dikayit? Am I a Jew who's able to live in Kodesh HaKodashim? Because that's what's going to happen when Mashiach comes. That's a type of life that we're going to lead. In order for that to happen, it has to be that we summon the Koyach that we have, which means Tisha B'Av and the 3 weeks and the 9 days are a call to action, a call to activate the deeper Koyach inside of us. That's what it says in the Pasuk, which is the Haftarah of Shabbos Hazoyin, Tzioin b'mishpat tipod b'shaveh b'tzedakah. That, hey, what do I do to release my Tzioin? So this time should call us to a cry and say, why am I not living fully like a Jew? And whatever, obviously I'm not living well enough as much as a Jew should, because if I was, then the Beis HaMikdash would have been rebuilt. And called Mishaloi Nivna Beis HaMikdash B'yomov, Ki Nechrab B'yomov, and that cry should touch the innermost core of our being. And if we feel the pressure of Atalia, if we feel the pressure of the 3 weeks, and we look at our deepest core, and we say, so what does it mean to be a Jew? What am I going to do to be Megale, my Jew, inside me? And if I can be Megale that, then I can go live in the Kodesh HaKodashim, which means that Tzioin is able to be revealed. And when it is, once and for all, then we experience the Tzion actually coming down. It's up to us.